You are listening to KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. And right now in studios, it's 8:34, almost 8:35. Welcome to our first call-in trends panel discussion. I am your host, Rosanna Longo-Better, and today we will be talking about burnt out, classified by the World Health Organization as a medical diagnosis described as a syndrome as a result of a chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. That's the way it's classified by the International Classification of Disease, the handbook that guides medical providers in diagnosing conditions. And today our guests are Rona Wilensky and Janine Dianivoli. I hope I'm pronouncing it correct. Welcome. Welcome to the show today.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
I'm so happy that you're here. So again, I welcome you to this trends panel discussion. That's how I'm calling it. It's a way of really opening a door to a new way of producing this podcast that I have been producing. I recently was able to interview a reporter just like me from the Denver Post, and she talked about burnout. She even requested a panel discussion to be set up for reporters. Why? Because she was experiencing the burnout, and they had a doctor, and the doctor from Anschutz explain that just like the medical providers in an emergency room, reporters are also experiencing the burnout. And that was an eye-opener for me and for the people that were there having the opportunity to listen to this professional. So I am super happy to have now the opportunity to talk to you. Why? Because you have another expertise, and the expertise is around education and also around medical providers. So I really appreciate you coming into the show today, and also to be able to open our airwaves and our phones and see if somebody would like to call us and ask questions to the experts this morning. This is fantastic. Thank you again. I think I'm going to start with Rona. Rona Wilensky, known in the community for her work with mindfulness programs for education at the Passage Works Institute, where she taught SMART in education, a mindfulness program for educators. Rona Wilensky is the founding principal of New Vista High School. Welcome. Rona, please tell me, how would you define burnout?
Well, I think it's interesting that the definition by the World Health Organization applies when things get really severe and when people have gotten to a place where it's almost a hole they don't know how to dig themselves out of because they're so disengaged and so exhausted and their reservoirs are depleted in a very deep way. I think we use the word more loosely than that, colloquially. And it's important that we have a medical definition and it's recognized as a syndrome. But I think what a lot of people talk about is just overwhelming stress and their relationships between those two, and they're technical, and that's not my area of expertise. But the research I know says that educators and nurses have the top levels of stress. And, you know, I'm not surprised that reporters are in that. What we see in educators, we do see burnout. I mean, everyone has had the experience of working with a teacher who just doesn't care anymore, completely disengaged, recycles lessons, you know, really should have left the profession a long time ago because they're not present for the students. So that happens. I don't know what the percentage of teachers are who are like that, but I think the more common phenomenon is something short of burnout, but something more than just normal everyday stress. So I'll stop there and see what Janine wants to share.
Yeah, thank you, Rona. You know, I think that one thing to be very clear, and I'm sure we'll dive into this deeper, is that burnout can be used as kind of a catch-all term for any kind of workplace or even personal disgruntlement, right? To just be like, well, I'm burnt out. If anything arises that's not good, that where there is dissatisfaction, right? And I want us to be clear that there's such things of just being maybe unhappy in a workplace, right? And then there is the real kind of what I call a whole body phenomena of burnout that affects us psychologically, physically, spiritually. And so I just want to make that distinction that it's not just about workplace or personal dissatisfaction. It's a different phenomena.
We are talking about burnout, what seems an occupational phenomena, like Janine Dianevoli is mentioning right now. She's a licensed psychologist and a national recognized expert in sexual assault and traumatic stress and treatment for survivors. Janine currently serves as the director of trauma services at Mental Health Partners in Lafayette, Colorado, and she also has been the director of Moving to End Sexual Assault, known as MESA, here in our community. Thank you again for joining me in this conversation. I also would like to welcome to join our conversation two callers today. And the phone number they can call is 303-442-4242. I have Evan assisting me this morning, and he can get your calls. And it will be fantastic to have you join this conversation that is so important. Maybe you are an educator or a medical provider or a person that has been experiencing this burnout condition, or you know somebody that has experienced this phenomenon. We would like to hear from you. So call us at 303-442-4242. I also want to now make sure that we continue this conversation because it's deep. I want to ask you, and you both can answer this question, what's the difference between stress and burnout?
Go ahead, Rana.
Again, I want to say this is not an area of expertise for me. I think burnout is that more extreme condition. And I think I was boning up on this a little bit yesterday and saw an article that said people tend to think the causality goes from stress to burnout, that burnout is just more stress or stress at a higher level. And an article I was reading, whose credibility I can't attest to, suggested that it's actually a dynamic relationship, that once you've experienced some level of burnout, then you are more susceptible to stress. And in the work that I've done in the SMART course that you mentioned earlier, Rosanna, we had a definition of stress as the perception that the circumstances you were in were making demands on you that exceeded your resources. So that can happen at a very low level of, you know, stress. You just don't think you can climb that mountain. I was just hiking recently, so that's, you know, and you feel like it's more than you can do. And there's a big conversation about the fact that it's the perception that it's more than you can do. And there's a writer, I think it's Kelly McGonigal, who says, if you change that perception and see it as a challenge rather than something that you can't accomplish, then that's an energizing form of stress and has positive effects. Whereas when you perceive it
recording
as
in much, progress,
too much to handle, then it depletes you. So it's complex. And I don't know, you know, when one goes to medical provider or a mental health provider, it may be very important to distinguish them. But all of them are, you know, we have this an epidemic of it. And I think what's interesting, I'll just say this before I turn it over to Janine, the World Health Organization definition assigns responsibility to the working place. They see it as an occupational, it happens in an occupation, and it's the result of both the interplay of an individual's psychology and well-being and the environment. And I think that's really important as we continue the conversation, that we don't just think about managing our stress individually, but we recognize what are the external circumstances that keep creating and recreating the demands that we perceive as too much.
Thank you. That is Rona Wilensky, mindfulness expert and former New Vista principal, talking about what really burnt out is. You know, more, it's deeper than just stress or what is happening at your workplace. Janine, do you want to compliment? Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. I love Rana's points. And I would just add a few things is that we can all relate to a stressful, bad day, right? I mean, we know those days, right? And typically, we have tools or strategies that we use to kind of manage that and bounce back from that. Like for me, personally, I know that I have just, if I have a just crappy day at work and you know, or in my personal world, if I can kind of center in, go for a walk with my dogs, eat a reasonably healthy meal, get a good night's sleep, you know, I can kind of rebuild. I can find that resilience and bounce back from that stress, right? Even if it was a crappy day. Burnout really is different in that every day is a bad day. And caring about, you know, your work or home life, wherever you're experiencing the burnout, it is just, it almost feels like there's a total lack of energy to deal with those. So in other words, we don't bounce back, right? And I really want to emphasize what Rona said. It's so, so important. And it's not because we're not taking care of ourselves well enough. It's about the actual structure of the workplace or the home life that's contributing to that. And almost no matter what we do, right, we're exhausted all the time. And what I see happening, the biggest mistakes we make as individuals and as workplaces, to be honest with you, if anybody's out there in representing their workplace or as a supervisor, manager, owner of a business, that it's not about the employees not taking good enough care of themselves. I think that's a fundamental error we make, right? That it's really about the systemic structures in place that's contributing, that almost any amount of self-care isn't going to help us pull out until we change those systems and structures. So I hope that makes sense.
That's Janine DeAnevale, and she's a licensed psychologist, and she is the director of trauma services at Mental Health Partners, and we're talking about burnout. Thank you for that explanation. I think it really clarifies the whole point. I just want to make a short reflection here and bring back that interview or that panel discussion with the doctor from Anschutz. And what he was defining is precisely what you are referring, Janine, that is the environment, the way is set up, the work environment is super important. And he was making the parallel in what I was explaining to you with reporters and people in the emergency room, because if people are in the emergency room, they need to know that they need to stop working at this certain time, and they need to have somebody saying to them, you have to go home and you have to take care of yourself, and we will take care of this, and you don't have to stay here. So it's essential to have that. But what happens is that, as you know, in an emergency room, things can happen and you have to just step in and don't go take a break. The same has happened with reporters when they have had to, you know, with the pandemic especially, had to do a lot of reporting to try to cover everything that is happening. And I can testify that from, you know, the pandemic to the fires last year to the mass shooting here and all those things that continue piling up, so you feel you cannot take a break. And even if they offer and they tell you, hey, go take a break, take care of yourself, it's almost impossible because of the nature of the occupation. And to that point, I just want to pause here and go back to this idea of educators and nurses who are the most vulnerable for suffering this condition. And go back to Rona and ask her to reflect on what has happened to the teachers this last year with the pandemic, how stressful it has been. Now that school is back, we are now having to deal with masks or no masks, for example, besides everything else that you have to do to teach the kiddos.
So I think what you just said, Rosanna, is very important. The pandemic is an added burden to what was already a stressful job. So the research on educators and health and nurses predates the pandemic. And the basic issue is we're asking educators and nurses to sacrifice their own well-being because we don't fund those institutions well enough to have enough people in them to do the work that needs to be done. And then you add the incredible transformation that had to happen within a 2-week period for educators to go from right before spring break to normal teaching to right after spring break, somehow transforming their teaching to being online. And then the continual uncertainty. Are we doing it this way this week? Are we doing it this way next week? Nobody knew this. There's nobody to blame at this level of the uncertainty. But in general, I would say teachers are not people who really are, you know, like to live at the edge of risk and the unknown. You know, the schools function best when they're predictable routines and we do things in certain ways that are ritualistic because that provides a sense of order and security and psychological safety for teachers and students. And then all of a sudden, everything is up for grabs. And then when you add on top of that, I'm truly adding insult to injury, where the school districts or the individual schools that ask teachers to simultaneously teach students in front of them in, you know, some students were allowed back in school after the lockdown. And so half of the students were in front of them and half of the students were on video, which is an insane request. And it's almost malpractice. I would say it is malpractice because you're asking one person to continually shift their modality of teaching. And inevitably, students in one setting or the other are compromised, are not having their needs met. And teachers feel a huge sense of responsibility for attending to and teaching their students. And everyone, you know, the vaccines came out and we all started getting vaccinated and everyone started making plans for going back to school normally, and which was a ridiculous assumption given that we're in a pandemic and given that the variants were already starting to show up in the spring. And there was just this political, psychological push to say it's going to be normal next year. And what we're experiencing now in August this year is the same thing we experienced last year, which our plans are changing at the last minute. And so what was going to be a normal lesson, what was going to be a normal year is now masks or no masks or the politics of masks or social distancing and nobody knows how much worse it's going to get. So I'll stop there and I'll turn it over to Janine because she has closer contact with the medical profession than I do. And she can speak to how the pandemic has played out for health, physical and mental health practitioners.
Yes, thank you. And so I would say that what I have been aware of in my role as the Director of Trauma Services at Mental Health Partners is the other two big populations affected most burned out, right, on the heels of COVID. And like you said, Rana, we've had other, that we've had the mass tragedy and the shooting in King Soopers, have been therapists, right, or mental health providers also, because here's the thing with mental health providers, they're dealing with their own responses to these things, their own family situation, their own personal situation related to COVID or the shooting. And then they are trying to hold space and being supportive for also those impacted. So they're getting it kind of from both sides. Same for first responders, right? We talked about nurses, but physicians, EMTs, same phenomena. And you know what I just read yesterday? The other profession, very, very much burnt out at this stage post-pandemic, are human resources professionals, right? Because they're the ones trying to manage all the change that you spoke about, and kind of nonstop navigating that change. So again, that's the system problem affecting burnout. Here's the thing. 92% of all workers working in any employment setting reported burnout during COVID. 92%. And we, I believe the research I know of in February stated that about 3 million women in particular left the workplace due to kind of burnout reasons during COVID. And that was, what, 9 months ago. So I'm sure that number is even higher. That's the lowest level of workplace kind of dropout that we have seen since the mid 80s. So we are in unprecedented times, I think, across really most of the service industries, right? And it just speaks to what a delicate place we're all in as we navigate this collective trauma, right? We've had trauma, on top of stress, on top of change, which is like the perfect recipe for burnout, unfortunately.
It's the perfect storm. Thanks, Janine, for explaining that. I think that's essential. And that's a reason, you know, I feel so honored to have the experts today here in the studios with me talking about this topic. And I want to encourage those listening to us today to call us. Please call 303-442-4242. 303-442-4242. If you have questions, if you want to share with us, if you are feeling burned out, if you have that condition, and if you have found, if you were able to find a way out, that will also be super nice to know. Or if you know about somebody that has experienced this and you know how it has manifested, because I'm pretty sure it affects the whole family. It's not only the person experiencing or the workplace, but I heard also that it's contagious. So if you can speak about that too.
I'd like to pick up on Janine's point about women dropping out of the workplace. And I think in a former life, I was an economist. And so it's one of those things I follow. And I think the major reason that is being ascribed to that is the impossible position women were put in when schools closed. I mean, the first thing I learned when I became a principal, which I had not gone to principal school or been an educator before that, so it was an unusual job for me to take, was that one of the primary roles, the first role that schools play in America is that they provide a place for kids to be during the day when their parents are working. And one of the things that does is it means that teachers are never off duty from taking care of the kids, which means that is one of the things that contributes to American teachers' fundamental stress, even pre-pandemic, which is they're always on, they're always taking care of kids, all their preparation, they get a period off every once in a while, but basically all their preparation happens at home outside school hours. But I don't want to go there. I just want to say schools close down and children, especially elementary school children and preschool children, have no place to be, and parents are facing this unbelievable conundrum. And you know, even if they're both home able to work, which that's only true of a small, you know, of a percentage of the people who were affected by pandemic situations, you can't, kids need attention. you just don't park them someplace and you're in the room and they're okay. And suddenly it became clear that someone couldn't be doing a job online if they had a job that could be done online and be giving the proper level of attention, presence, affection, stimulation to the children. And so in the way that, given that we have a highly gendered society and women have been assigned the role of taking care of children, and often women are making less than the men, then the family makes the rational decision. And it, sometimes it's not always a man and woman in the family, but they make a decision about who's going to take care of the children. And all of a sudden, parents are in the role of providing that childcare that teachers were, unpaid. So it's really interesting to think about, to connect another dot here, you know, part of Joe Biden's $3.5 trillion budget plan is to pay people when they are taking care of children, to pay people when they are taking care of sick spouses or partners or husbands or parents, so that people aren't bearing the burden of individual care and trying to survive economically in a an economy that has very few social safety nets. So it's just, and women have always been bearing that stress of work-life balance, it's called, but, you know, having some role in the paid economy and bearing the larger burden of domestic life, childcare, food, all the things that go with maintaining a home.
Rona Wilensky talking about burnout this morning. I also want to point out that it's 9:02 here at the KGNU studios. And I want to also invite everybody to call us 303-442-4242. If you have questions, if you want to participate in this conversation that is deep this morning, really deep. Janine, would you like to also continue that conversation? You know, you are setting up a point, Rona, here that it affects the businesses. If we look at how much money an organization invests in training a person, and if this person gets burnout, they leave and you have to then train another person again. So I'm pretty sure, you know, in the economic world, it doesn't make sense. And that is something that was also mentioned in that panel discussion. You know, the medical providers or the medical world woke up when they realized, when they put together the numbers, and they said, if we get all these nurses and the people in the emergency room, you know, not staying, and we have to train them again, this is the amount of money you will have to invest again and again and again with each person. So it's only when we bring those numbers that people wake up, sadly. Janine.
Yes. I mean, I think that's a point here. This part of a dynamic that we're in is people in the workplace, right? The overwhelming kind of demand in the workplace and fewer resources leads to more burnout. Then someone is burned out and they leave. So then what does that mean? It means other people in that workplace, right, have to try to pick up the slack and even get a more unmanageable job than they had in the first place. So I think that's what you were saying with it being like contagious, right? It can then spread throughout the workplace. It can even spread like that throughout a family system. So for instance, one of the kind of behavioral signs of burnout is that people might withdraw from responsibilities or isolate from others, or take out frustrations on others, right? And those dynamics then can add stress either to the family system or to the workplace system. So you have kind of compounded levels of stress and burnout. So we are in an unprecedented level of this in our culture right now. So I think this discussion is is so important of how we navigate this as our systems are at an all-time stressful high.
It's not easy, that's for sure. Not easy at all. Janine de Anivale talking to us about burnout this morning, a topic that is, again, deep and complex. And also, you know, it was determined in 1974. That's what I read, that it was assigned as a medical condition or diagnosis. But now with everything that we have gone through, this is, you know, it's so present in our lives that maybe now we are reflecting more on this. And it's also, I have heard that people are saying going back to normal, you know, after what we have gone through, it's not possible and it should not be done. One of the things that Rona was pointing out is, you know, parents having to stay at home to teach the kids and how much that affected women in the workplace, because they had to drop their jobs in order to do the most important work that I always say, being a mother. That's the most important work that we have, being parents. And it has affected the whole system, the whole family dynamics even. It's huge. And now we're expected to go back to normal with all the restrictions, and there's no normality. And we really need to reflect on this. And I want to, again, invite people that are listening to us this morning to call. The number is 303-442-4242. We have two experts here that would really like to answer your questions if you have a question, or we would like to hear from your experience. I have another question here that I have been thinking about asking you. Which are the frequent symptoms that people can experience when they get this diagnosis of burnout? How can you identify if it's only stress or if it's this condition?
Yeah, it's such a great question, because there is some overlap in the system, in the symptoms between the two. So let me see if I can flesh that out a little bit. I like to think of it as like I said when we started, burnout is like a whole body experience, and it's psychological, you know, emotional, physical, and spiritual. Okay. And so the physical signs, right, are that just feeling tired and drained kind of consistently, like not one day, but like all the time. Lower immunity, right, more frequent illness or sickness, or kind of physical gastrointestinal pain, headaches, muscle pain, right? Those are the physical pieces. This is where it starts to differentiate from stress, and that is things like the emotional signs, like a sense of failure, like I am no good at what I'm doing, thoughts, feeling kind of helpless or trapped, you know, or just overall defeated, being more cynical, more angry, and not feeling a sense of satisfaction or accomplishment in what we do. Right? Notice how that doesn't always go along with stress. I mean, stress is hard, but we still have usually some sense of efficacy. Like I can still do or accomplish or get something done. Burnout, that is gone. Okay. It's just feeling like there's no satisfaction or meaning in what I'm doing. And then more the behavioral symptoms are what I referred to earlier, which is maybe withdrawing from our responsibilities, kind of checking out, procrastinating, even, you know, skipping work, not going to work, absenteeism, taking frustrations out on others. And then, of course, turning to maybe things like drugs or alcohol or maybe some unhealthy food choices to cope. So it's really this whole picture, this whole kind of symptom presentation.
Janine de Anivale talking about burnout this morning. And that, you know, the way you explain between stress, the difference between stress and burnout is fantastic. It's what it is, really, because yes, we live in a stressful world, but when you start feeling, it's kind of odd, that you are not the best, that you are not doing a good job, that you are feeling that you are not cut for the job. That's when it really hits you. It really hits you. Rona.
Exactly. So well said. So well summarized.
I think that everybody is listening this morning to us and thinking, we want to hear from the experts more than calling. But I want to make the last call because it's 9-11 right now. And I want to give the phone number again, 303-442-4242. Evan is here waiting for your calls. He's going to screen the calls and pass them to me if you want to share this morning with us. Rona, I would like to also allow you to follow up the conversation with those symptoms that were described by Janine so well this morning.
So I think that was a complete and perfect, I have nothing to add to what the symptoms are. I think I maybe want to go on a slightly build off of that and talk about this tension that Janine mentioned earlier between self-care and system change, because there's actually an interplay there. You can't actually give up all responsibility for your own well-being and say it's the system's fault, and neither can the system sort of say this is how life is, it sucks to be you, you know, take care of yourself, but not on company time. It's, you know, we can wear masks in the pandemic, but we need people to be vaccinated. We need ventilation systems. It's the same thing. It's this balance between making individual decisions and making collective decisions. And so when I teach mindfulness, I try to be very clear to people that the skills I'm teaching can help alleviate stress. Not burnout, because I think burnout requires a much bigger intervention than mindfulness provides. But you can take those pauses during the day. You can take some deep breaths, a variety of strategies that mindfulness offers us that can sometimes transform a person's whole relationship to their world, but mostly that's not what happens. And always reminding them that somebody needs to be responsible for changing the overwhelming demands of the workplace. And, you know, I don't always say this, but I can say this on KGNU, you know, join the union. You know, it's like demand that your principal engage in a conversation about how we can take some things off the plate. You know, all the mindfulness and yoga in the world are not going to compensate for the continual reinforcement. So I saw something yesterday, an article I was reading by people who specialize, academics who specialize in vacation science. Who knew that there were vacation science researchers? But they were clear that, you know, we all look forward to vacation. Teachers look forward to maybe if there's fall break, but there isn't in Boulder, but in other places there are. You know, they're hanging on in October and they're waiting to get to Thanksgiving, and then they're waiting to get to Christmas, and then they're waiting to get to Martin Luther King weekend, and they're waiting to get to President's Day, and then spring break is around the corner, and then they're waiting to get to summer. And that's what their whole life is about. That was my life. Let me say that. I won't ascribe that to other people. You're just hanging on. But the fact is, you go away, you restore yourself, and you step back into the same river, and within days, you're almost as bad as you were before. Whatever glow, whatever reservoir, whatever resourcing you did during the vacation period is for naught, because you've stepped right back into the same situation, which triggers, you know, the demands.
Rona Wilensky this morning talking about burnout with us and the situation that we are experiencing. We have a call. Jim is on, and he would like to join the conversation this morning. Let's see if we can get him on. Jim, welcome to our conversation this morning. Do you have a question this morning for us?
Yeah, a question, sort of a comment, and then I'd like to hear, you know, what the experts have to say about it. I appreciate the conversation very much, and KGNU in general. So thank you for bringing this to us. My thought is more around sort of the backdrop, the context that this is all taking place in. And I've worked my whole career towards trying to get us on a more sustainable path, and there's very little to show for that. The global climate change is much worse. You know, the resources are more depleted, the population is up, the state of the biosphere is more imperiled than ever. And with the fires and floods and all these things hitting us, every day, every week, wherever we are, and just locally, we've had this bad air. I mean, we're having the first morning of air in the acceptable air quality range in over a week. And as a former asthmatic, you know, that's when you can't go outside or being outside is at your peril. It's just a very daunting backdrop. And my thought is that the particularly high levels of burnout and stress and anxiety that we're seeing, you know, that this backdrop of mounting climate change, which is really starting to affect everybody in some way, you know, some of the time, is contributing to that. And I think all the bad air. And so I was just wondering if this sort of environmental backdrop, and I agree with, I mean, I like all the comments. I go out in my garden a little bit or walk around the block, try to break things up to get myself, you know, turn off the news for a while, but still, when the air's out there, when you could just see it and taste it, it's very hard to get away from it, and this is very challenging. So, I mean, I'm not in one of those really difficult professions where, you know, I should be feeling so stressed and burnt out, but I am to a fair degree, but I see it a lot from this backdrop, and I was just wondering what you all thought about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, James, so much. Please, Janine or Rona, if you want to follow up. Thank you for sharing, James, this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was an excellent, excellent call. And I would say, yeah, absolutely. The way I view climate change, right, that is part of what has been in our air quality, you know, our air quality, as a traumatic stressor. It is threat, right? It is a lack of safety and threat in our environment. And like you said, the dailiness, the constantness of that air is a reminder, as a tangible physical presence of that threat, right? Can have our nervous system on edge and dysregulated. And as you said so eloquently, Jim, you can't escape that, right? You can turn off the news. You can't escape the air looking outside and seeing that haze. So I think this climate change piece is part of our collective trauma that we're in that then kind of builds on these other things, COVID, you know, these very distressing things in the news. It just adds again to that perfect storm of us feeling depleted, right? Which is part of burnout. So absolutely. Excellent point, Jim.
Thank you, Janine. It's the perfect storm. We also have Robert in the line, and I'm going to try to get him on. Hello, Robert. Are you there?
Yes, thank you.
Fantastic. Do you have a question for the experts this morning?
Well, more of a contribution, I hope. First, I want to remind or let people know that you have such valuable information so far, and it's easy to go back, you know, to the KGNU website and listen again to pick up on some of the great information and helpful things that have been said in the show. So I encourage people to review this program for that purpose. And then I would like to add that it's so interesting to me in my life study how physical conditions, emotional, psychological, and spiritual are so much the same, have such similarity. We seem to know more about our, you know, what our physical condition, what our essential nourishment, you know, what kind of foods exercise are essential for health, I found it helpful to actually write down, you know, physical, emotional, psychological, spiritual, four categories, and under each one, list for yourself what are the essential nourishments that I know of for my well-being in each of these areas, and then what in each one is toxic to me? What are substances or things that happen that are poisonous to my system? What things have injured me, or how am I injured in each of these? What is hurting me? And I guess also to consider in each one what it has been neglected or is being neglected. I've already said what is toxic and what is injuring. And then lastly, of course, each one, what nourishes me? What is essential in each one of these things for nourishment? What kind of things are healing for me to heal the injuries or the toxicity? And especially, what is delightful? What in each of those things really makes me smile, makes me happy? And of course, all of this are things that not only help us, but that then help others around us in the workplace, at home, along life's way. It's amazing what a simple smile can do for ourselves or for others, or some laughing, whatever it is that makes us happy. So that's what I have. And thank you for the show.
Thank you so much, Robert, for calling today and sharing with us. And yes, you are completely right. A nice smile always works. And I think that what you are referring right now, it's really about mindfulness. So I would like Rona now Wilinski to respond to your call. Thank you again for joining us, Robert.
Thank you, Robert. What I was reminded of as you spoke is that I sometimes in my workshops, I ask people, instead of teaching them what are the things that can relieve stress, I ask them, you know, what are the things that help and what are the things that hinder? And what one easily discovers is that we all know that information. We know that getting sleep and rest and eating well and exercising and relationships and connecting to nature, and we know what is good for us and we know what's bad for us. And what's interesting among educators, where I've spent most of my time, but I've also done it with health practitioners and mental health practitioners, is that I think there's another question, which is, if you know what would help you, why don't you do it? You know, because I say to them, you know, I could teach you mindfulness, but it's not going to help you any more than the yoga workshop you took and you didn't do the yoga afterwards. You know, you can have as many arrows in your quiver as you like, but what's underneath it? And we've identified one big thing which is underneath it, which is the environment and the context within which you're working. And I'm not going to go there again. I want to go to a more psychological dimension, which is that people who are in the human services have a great fear of being thought selfish. So self-care, which is something that needs to be part of the equation, it isn't the whole answer, but it needs to be part of the equation, is something that people feel guilty about. And it's a very, some of that messaging comes from the sector itself and the way people are trained, but it's also who gets attracted to being in the service professions. It's often in those professions, at some levels, are very highly staffed by women who are also programmed, enculturated, I should say, to think that being selfish, taking care of yourself is being selfish, is the way people often frame it. And we really need a major reframe when it comes to that portion of the solution that is our responsibility, to realize that self-care is not selfish. Self-care is how you resource yourself so that you're available to others that you want to serve. So earlier, Janine spoke about the mental health workers who are carrying the double burden of their own response to the crises and then having to be present and hold the space and provide the compassion and the support to everyone else's suffering. Well, you can't do that unless you're resourced. So for people and, you know, and all of us, even if we're not in the healthcare education worlds, we are present in other people's lives. So that contagion that we talked about earlier is because, you know, people aren't resourced enough to cope with what's happening. And that's not assigning them blame. And then they're not available to support others. And we need others. None of us can support our own well-being without relationships. Our nervous systems are wired to connect. Our physiologies are wired to connect. And so the dilemmas posed by structural problems are real and require a major intervention. But we do have some work to do on our own understandings about the value of self-care and the importance of self-care. And then setting boundaries, and that's another psychological challenge for people, how to say no. It's like, no, no, I'm going home now. No, I'm not going to do that story. No. And that's not something we're really well taught either in this culture.
Rona Wilensky, known in the community for her work with mindfulness programs for educators at the Passage Works Institute. You nail it. You're completely right. This is also a cultural dilemma. And especially, and I'm going to reflect here on being an immigrant and coming to America with a different culture. Here, productivity, quantity is so important that you are caught in having to show every minute your work and what you have done is more important of what you are or who you are in the world. So it's super to the point. Janine, do you want to make a comment around this too?
I don't have much more to add, except to say this is the time to, for all of us, I think, every one of us, to reevaluate our priorities, right? What do we want to prioritize? And I think to piggyback on Rana's point, like it's okay to also have that answer be, I want to prioritize myself, or I want to prioritize my relationship, right? Or whatever. Like, so really take away what is most important and start there.
Janine Dianevale, she is a psychologist, licensed psychologist, and a national recognized expert in sexual assault and traumatic stress and treatment for survivors. Janine is currently the director of trauma services at Mental Health Partners. Thank you so much. What you have said right now is so important. Two things that I just want to, you know, highlight: self-care, having to say no, and having good relationships. That is key to keep the burned out checked, I'm going to say. Thank you again, really. I want to thank our guest this morning, Rona Wilensky and Janine Dianevale, for all the deep engagement with the complex topic of burnout affecting mostly people that hold certain occupations that tend to be diagnosed with this, defined as a syndrome as a result of a toxic workplace where, you know, you have a lot of stress and it has not been successfully managed. That is all the time we have. I want to thank Jim and Robert for calling us. And I also want to thank Evan this morning for screening the calls for us. And sorry for those that were not able to call. Please check out this video again. We have it live on Facebook. If you want to see our guests this morning, they were fantastic. I want to thank you again. And this has been a wonderful conversation, and it has been the first call-in trends panel discussion show that I have done with fantastic guests and with an amazing topic that sadly is a topic that is important for us to touch and see and reflect on. I have been your host, Rosanna Longo-Better, and please stay tuned today for the 2 hours and a half of music of Sound Alternative here in KGNU. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
It's fun. Nice to meet you, Janine. I've heard about you forever.